Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the show where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Allison with a Y.
Hello.
And Allison with an I.
Hey.
And we are here today for our monthly horror catch-up episode where we break down all the horror that we've been watching and reading and listening to over the past month. We've got, I think, kind of a whopper of an episode today, so let's get right to it. We're going to start with something that's actually a little... It's been out for a while now, but because we do this monthly, I think we absolutely cannot let this episode go by without discussing Sinners, a movie that Allison with a Y and I both saw. Allison with an I, get your ass to the theater as soon as possible. You got to see it.
I know. I'm sorry. I've been busy.
It's okay, but it's... For your sake, you need to see it.
I know. I keep hearing that. Did you guys love it?
I loved it.
Loved it. And obsessed. It's like, you know, before we started the episode today, Allison with an I said, like, don't spoil it. And obviously, I'm the most anti-spoiler person of all time. I'm very protective of that. And I was very protective of it with Sinners. I was like hearing from people like, oh, my God, like, see this. Don't learn as little about this as possible before you see it. And I was expecting big spoilers. There's nothing super spoilable about this to me. It's just a damn well-made movie.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I've never really seen anything like it. It's been so long just world building and character developing and really engaging way. Like, I think a lot of times, sometimes films, before you get into like the heavy shit, they spend a little bit too much time, but it didn't feel like that with this movie at all. It was interesting. It was engaging at all, and it all served the greater purpose of the film.
Yeah, I mean, they spend an hour just driving around introducing characters, more or less. And that alone is, you know, there was absolutely zero, you know, metaphorically looking at my watch. I was super in it. All the characters are so fun, so engaging, great performances, beautifully directed and shot. So even when it's just, they're theoretically doing just like quote unquote boring stuff, it's very entertaining to watch. And then you have an hour of vampire standoff in a, you know, what year does this take place?
It's in the 1930s.
Yeah, 1930s juke joint that a group of folks have opened up as kind of an underground black music venue in the South. And vampires, white Irish vampires, lay siege to the juke joint. And it's great. Either half of it works like fucking gangbusters.
And like, even just the horror elements aside, as somebody who loves history and has spent a long time really learning about, frankly, the darker parts of American history, it was really incredible to see this kind of portrayal on film done in such a way that feels like, I mean, you know, like, once again, horror elements aside, that felt so real and felt so historically accurate in a lot of ways, and in honoring cultures, was so respectful and so honoring of multiple cultures. And really, like, I mean, fucking Ryan Coogler did his fucking research for this film, and it shows. And it pays off so well.
He's such a talented guy. And his resume at this point in his career, which is still, all things considered, fucking early, is insane. Like, the track record is insane. Fruitvale Station, Black Panther, Creed. Second Black Panther was a little weaker for me. But, I mean, that's okay. You can have a sort of okay film out of, you know, what, five or six absolute bangers that he's done.
Well, and speaking of the second Black Panther film, my understanding is, like, one of the great parts of that is the rich villain. And that is so true in Sinners as well, is the villain is written, despite the fact that they are a vampire, with so much humanity. And you have, as the audience, such an understanding of like, oh yeah, okay, I can see why you are the way you are. And it's so satisfying.
Interestingly, I've heard that from a few different folks who saw the movie, and that did not connect with me. The villains in this felt, I don't quite want to say cartoonish, but they felt a little simple to me. And that wasn't a problem for me. I just didn't pick up on the depth. I was talking to somebody who said that the lead vampire is a Killmonger-level sympathetic villain. And I was holy shit. I did not get that out of it. And that's one of the reasons that I really want to see this again before it leaves theaters. Not least because it looks fucking beautiful and sounds gorgeous and is an incredible movie to see on the big screen.
And in all fairness, like when I'm saying like the villains, I really mean like the main villain. That's what I mean when I say like the villain is just, you know, I think so rich and completely justified, misguided, but justified from his point of view and his actions. And the music, oh my God, the music.
Fantastic. Especially as like, I mean, when I was first getting seriously into music when I was a teenager, like I started with blues because that's the fucking, you know, roots of American music, obviously. And so I have a huge appreciation for that music to this day. And so it was delightful to see it spotlighted in this movie so well and to see some really legendary musicians involved in the movie as well.
Yeah, from the blues standpoint, it was incredible, but it also brings in Irish folk as well. And then at times blends the two, and it really powerful because for me, both of those genres are so full of grief, are so full of joy, are these big emotions, they're very cathartic forms of music culturally. And there's something very magical, I find, about Irish folk music. But there's also something very magical, I find, about blues music that's really like rooted in Black American culture.
Well, and there's one incredibly technically virtuosic, truly, shot in this movie that sums up the importance and the power and the history of Black music, both before, during, and after this movie.
Chills.
And absolutely. I just got chills thinking about it again. The work that went into putting that together is insane to think about, and the impact of it is just wild, especially again to see it in a theater, the fucking Dolby surround. I don't want to say much else about it for folks like Allison with an eye who haven't seen it yet, but go see this shit on the big screen. It works like gangbusters, and I'm so fucking glad to see it doing well. Not only a genre film, but a genre film based on completely original material, not based on existing IP, and a movie that actually has something to say and is well made. It's just like the good guys winning for fucking once.
This film has had a lot of people looking into history in new ways, has a lot of people looking into music in new ways, and it's been a really incredible connector. I saw this wonderful TikTok of, no spoilers, but there's this very, there's another big music number where a lot of people are involved. And there was a recreation of it at a Comic-Con very recently.
Oh.
That brought so many people of all different backgrounds all together in this like absolute joyful scene.
Huh. I want to see that. And we'll link to that in the show notes as well in case anyone out there wants to see it. We keep things semi-brief on Horror Catch-Up, so I think we'll move on from Sinners, but I do want to throw in one last note, which is our old co-host and dear friend Chris finally saw it recently, and his review, which I told him I was going to read on the show, to which he said, "Give me credit, bitch." So here's your credit, bitch. His one-line review that fucking killed me was, Sinners is like, what if John Carpenter made a good movie? and I say that, and I know Chris, a huge John Carpenter fan, says that with all the love in the world for John Carpenter, but it is like, yeah, what if John Carpenter made a good movie?
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
So fucking Sinners. Go see Sinners.
I fucked around and avoided so many spoilers for that movie that I don't even think I knew what it was about.
Oh.
So thank you for the brief synopsis and background, but like, now I feel like I need to go see it even more. We probably have like, what, a week left?
You're going to love
it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's probably on digital next week.
Yeah. Damn it.
No, honestly, it's done so well in the theater that it'll probably still have some legs. So there might still be time. Maybe we can go see it on the $5 Tuesday next week.
Hell yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But Allison, with an eye, I know you caught up to a movie that has gotten a lot of love on this show for me and from our old cast. And given the preliminary thoughts you gave before this episode, it sounded like you might be a dissenting voice. Tell us about The Substance.
Yeah, speaking of movies that took me way too long to see, I finally fucking saw The Substance, and wow, that's what I said to Patrick when I told him we'd be talking about this. Wow. I'm sure, I mean, everybody shares that same sentiment, you know, and I'm realizing just right now as I'm talking that, like, I go into most movies not knowing a lot about them and not wanting to know a lot about them.
It's the way to do it.
Yeah, including movies I go see in the theater. Like, there are so many good horror. I mean, there are so many horror movies coming out soon.
Love that self-edit.
important distinction. That, you know, if the trailer looks good enough for me and if it's based on source material that I'm interested in, it's based on a book that I read, whatever, I'm like, done, enough. I'm going to go see it, you know, or I'm going to make sure to watch it. So The Substance was one of them. My thoughts, holy shit. So Demi Moore just came out of wherever the fuck she was retiring and made the shit out of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of TNA in this movie, including like what I think is probably actually Demi Moore's real tits. But I did have to look into Margaret Qualley.
Yeah, right? Not her real tits or ass.
No, I was like, damn, girl. I mean, she's cute, right? But she's like little and tiny. I'm like, is that her real body? Because... tea. Body is giving tea. Not. It was not her. But holy shit. I read a funny review that was like, her ass gets more screen time than all of Godzilla did in the Godzilla
movie. Oh my God.
But you know, it was like naked, but not sexy, right? It was fucking disgusting. So this was one of the most disgusting movies I've ever seen in my life. And and Patrick mentioned on the break, like, this is one movie that I might buy on Blu-ray. And when that movie ended, I thought, I'm so glad I saw it, but I will never watch this movie again.
Oh, okay. That was what you were – that's where you're a dissenting voice on this one. Yeah, you're just like, one round is good enough.
One round is good enough. Yeah. Like, I am not squeamish, especially when it comes to – I mean, talk about, like, exaggerated horror, you know, where, like, they're in the theater and she's just exploding blood for, like, 5 minutes. Clearly, that's not rooted in reality, right? Like, that's not, like – gore enough, like realistic gore enough to make me feel squeamish, but just the bravery that they have and the lines they crossed. Allison, by the way, have you seen The Substance?
No, I refuse.
Oh my God.
I really, really want them to, but you're against it on the gore level, right?
I have a weak stomach.
Disgusting.
You would love it.
And I do not.
I think you would love it. I mean, you would certainly grit your teeth at some scenes, but I think you would love it overall.
I think you would really appreciate the message, right? Which is just the toxicity of celebrity culture, the toxicity of society's response around aging, especially as it relates to women and the pressure we put on ourselves and the toxicity of being a has-been or being washed up. And, like, it speaks perfectly to, you know, the pressure that women are under to not age, right? Mm. And if you age, you're out, right? You get phased out. You're forgotten about. To watch Demi Moore, this desperate, frantic, hysterical grappling between this is wrong and I can't stop doing it. And I don't know how now, like she literally creates a monster. Mm. So I don't know how much of the premise, and I don't want to totally spoil it for you why if you happen to see it, but I do think that there is a message there that every woman resonates with.
Yeah.
And like for me personally, you know, I have no shame in saying like I've gotten some cosmetic things done, you know, like I've gotten some Botox in my life and chemical peels. And like, you know what? I'm very comfortable with my choices to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't shame anybody for doing it or not doing it. But I will say like just highlighting that culture of aging and cosmetics is – it was brave and it was a kind of fuck you. Yeah. That I think we needed, you know?
Yeah.
While also being acted perfectly, in my opinion, and one of the most disgusting movies I've ever seen. So, I mean, big fucking fan of The Substance. Don't feel like I ever need to watch it again. Like, got the message loud and clear. Don't think I'll ever be able to, like, unknow what that message was if I tried. Yeah, The Substance knocked my socks off. I was like mouth agape for much of it. And there were some uncomfortable truths there, I think, that I'm actually really proud of Hollywood for calling out.
Mm.
You know, like it was more self-reflective than a lot of things we've seen.
Hell yeah.
From the industry.
I'm actually just slightly sad that you liked it because I wanted to have an excuse to say, we are sorry that you did not enjoy your experience with The Substance. That was like the best joke in the whole movie to me. I cackled.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, unfortunately for you, I liked it.
Damn it.
I did enjoy my experience, but wow. I was like, never eating chicken again.
Oh, or shrimp.
Or shrimp. That was gross. Yeah.
Well, before we kind of close out our movie, horror movie catch up for this episode, I want to give a quick shout out to a movie that seemed like it was just in and straight back out of theaters, which was kind of sad to me. Freaky Tales is the movie. It's on digital now. That's how I saw it because I think it was in my local theater for like 2 weeks or something. It's a delightful sci-fi horror anthology movie set in 1987, Oakland, California. It's directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck, who have an interesting track record. They did Half Nelson, which was kind of Ryan Gosling's big coming out movie as a serious actor couple decades ago. They also did the Captain Marvel movie randomly, but this is just an absolute blast. It has just that big, like, kind of gritty VHS genre movie kind of feel to it. It definitely has a sense of humor paired with some incredibly tragic moments, but it's I believe four different vignettes all taking place around a big basketball championship game in 1987. Apologies to any basketball fans who are listening to this, because I'm sure this was a gigantic game and you could tell me exactly the names of the teams that were involved. I'm not there. But it is tied to that historical event. And we've got an incredible ensemble cast. We've got my daddy and the internet's daddy, Pedro Pascal, in a tragic fucking father role again. But of course, he does that incredibly well. It has Ben Mendelsohn, who I fucking love.
Oh.
Angus Cloud, RIP. I think this might be his final film role after his incredibly tragically young death. But man, it's such a weird movie. There's this green sci-fi type of energy bopping around throughout these vignettes, imbuing characters with different strange powers. We've got a segment about a group of punk rockers trying to shut down a group of violent skinheads. We've got a sequence about Pedro Pascal and of course, again, tragic shit that happened with his wife and kid, him kind of trying to figure that out. We've got a segment about a basketball player named Sleepy Floyd. Is Sleepy Floyd a real basketball player? Yes, he fucking is. What the fuck? he is played in this movie by Jay Ellis, but he turns out to be like a kung fu master. I don't know. It's just a bizarre genre mashup. It's a lot of fun. It's incredibly well acted, well directed, and I had a great time with it. So check out Freaky Tales. I don't think it got its due in theaters, but it's a good time. Allison, with an I, you and I sort of have a hybrid movie book discussion here. You sent me a trailer a couple weeks ago for the movie The Long Walk, which is an adaptation of Stephen King writing as Richard Bachman book, which I actually had never heard of, but is apparently beloved by many King fans, including you, right?
Yeah, I sent you the trailer thinking you would be as excited to see that there's a movie coming out that is an adaptation of one of my favorite Stephen King books.
Yeah.
Only to have you be like, I've never read that book.
Yeah, I was like, what's this?
I'm sorry. Wait, let's back this up.
Yeah, I jumped into the audiobook almost immediately because I had been looking for a new audiobook and just to learn that this was actually the first book he ever wrote. Not the first of his that was published, but he wrote this when he was in college before he wrote Carrie. Carrie was his first published book, but this is the first one he actually wrote. So that was kind of interesting. But holy fuck, this was bleak.
Uh-huh.
Holy shit. The premise, for those who are not aware, is there's this annual long walk where young men from across the country sign up. They really want to do this. They sign up to be in this cross-country, cross-state walk where if your pace slows below a certain level, you get shot to death. And the last man standing, the last person still walking, gets whatever he wants. Literally, the prize is just whatever you want. Your dreams come true. Bleak shit.
Yeah. I think this was the only one of Stephen King's books that I cried at the end. Shit. There's only been a couple of books that have made me cry, but this was one of them, just because the characters that you come to love and learn so much about as they get to know each other on this walk, in my opinion, are so well developed. And it's really hard not to get attached, right, to them. And the premise is just so outlandish, but it's written in a way that you almost believe that it could be possible, like that there could be a world that exists where this long walk also exists. So right. It just felt to me like just heart-wrenching because, you know, a lot of people die.
Right. It's incredibly powerful social commentary. I mean, it came out in late 70s, I believe, and he certainly wrote it around that time. It might have been published early 80s. But from what I've read, I mean, a common analysis, and I think he may have also even tipped his hat to this, is that it's a metaphor for the Vietnam War, which, of course, yeah, would have been topical when he wrote it. But I mean, holy fuck, you know, reading it 40 whatever years after its publication, it just feels like a strong metaphor for living in late stage capitalism in general. Yeah. It's just totally. Like everybody is queuing up, can't wait to sign up to absolutely waste their bodies and very probably lose their lives for the shot at being the one person who gets everything they want, you know? Yeah. It works extremely well on that level, which, you know, I don't think that was necessarily his intention, but still works like gangbusters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, it's timeless, this tale.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably why it's being adapted right now. It's being directed by Francis Lawrence, who did, I think, almost all of the Hunger Games movies. So he clearly has a thing for
feels appropriate
social commentaries that involve young people dying for no good reason.
for the promise of what?
Yeah. But I am excited about it on that level because I don't think I saw all the Hunger Games movies, almost all of them, but I was impressed with his work on those. And this stars Cooper Hoffman, Philip Seymour Hoffman's son, as the main character, Garrity. And I'm very excited about that because he is, I mean, weirdly, the fucking spitting image of his dad, and even some of like his mannerisms are just weirdly similar, mm-hmm. but he is also a really talented actor in his own right. I've seen him in Licorice Pizza and the Saturday Night Live movie, and he hasn't done much else, but he really impressed me in those. So I'm excited to see him in this movie that's coming out September 12th of this year.
Oh, classic. It's perfect timing.
I'm glad you made that joke because I was like, should I do that? Yeah. I'm not going to go there.
Are you kidding?
Mark Hamill is in the movie? What?
Wow.
Who is Mark Hamill playing? He's the major. I didn't even spot that.
Of course he's the major. He's got to be.
What the fuck? He's weirdly such a chameleon. He can do anything. God bless.
In the very short trailer that I got to see, and now that you've read the book, I don't know if you rewatched the trailer, but myself and I think a lot of other people who loved the book are really excited about what the trailer looks like it could be, which is a very, very good, close adaptation of the movie, or mm-hmm. the book rather. Mm-hmm. So I'm really hoping it stays true to the book because I don't think they need to take any really many creative liberties to fill out, you know, there's so much depth in these characters.
Yeah.
Because the premise itself is very boring, right? They're just walking.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there's like not a lot of frills there, but.
Right. It's punctuated by moments of intense violence and shock, but yeah, a lot of it is just, you have to rely on a strong cast performing these characters well and building relationships well. And I think a lot of the other young actors in the movie are, I've never heard of them anyways. But Cooper Hoffman's a good sign, I think, for them handling that well.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's one of the many, many horror movies I'm looking forward to, to seeing late summer, early fall this year. So we'll have to talk about it once we watch it.
Absolutely. Very curious about it.
Yep.
Well, that's The Long Walk. We got a few other books to talk about this episode. I want to give a quick shout out to an incredible graphic novel I read called Tender. It's written and drawn by Beth Hetland. And it kind of actually reminds me of the discussion we just had about The Substance. It's another story, obviously told by a woman about the experience of being a woman in society. It's about this character who is absolutely desperate to almost a pathetic degree to live kind of the standard wife and mother kind of life. And she goes to sort of psychotic extremes to lock down what she thinks is going to be the perfect husband, get pregnant, have a baby, all of this stuff. And surprise, it ends up not quite being what she wants it to be. And she ends up, I'll just say, very literally giving parts of herself to sort of sustain this life that she's created. The author's art in particular is just incredible. She kind of works in this bluish purple sort of monochrome palette for most of the book. And she just does a really remarkable job of shifting between sort of innocuous cartoonish drawings that seem, you know, sort of pleasant and homey to just some of the most disturbing and graphic, nightmarish scenes of body horror that I've seen in a bit. There were pages of this that I like simultaneously couldn't stop looking at because the ideas behind the violence were so captivating, and there were things I had never seen before, and I wanted to keep looking at them, and the craftsmanship with which they were represented was incredible, but also I had to stop because they were too gross and they were making my skin crawl. It was a really wonderful and weird experience. So check out Tender by Beth Hetland if you like a good spooky graphic novel. Allison with a Y, I know that you've got a book to tell us about too.
Yeah, I have a book. I listened to an audiobook, just one. Ever.
That's good. You don't need to do more than one audiobook.
Ever.
Ever in your life.
I wanted a ghost story, as I do, and I found this one called The Toll House by Carly Regan, and I really enjoyed it. I don't know if it's the best, you know, ghost story, spooky book, but it was a really nice listen. One of the things that I liked about it is that, for the most part, it all took place in this one house, but it jumped between two time periods. So it went between like the late 1800s to, and then it would jump to modern time. Hmm. And so it was basically telling the story of this haunting in this house and the origins of the haunting and then how the haunting was manifesting in modern day and the parallels between kind of the problems that the two families have. And I thought the lead character was pretty compelling. There were some interesting twists in it, some things that came up that I didn't expect. You know, I think there was a lot of information in there that didn't necessarily lend to the ghost story itself, but I actually liked it because it really fleshed out, I think, the complicated nature of these families' lives and maybe why the things that were happening were even more impactful and difficult and strange to deal with. There were definitely spooky moments. There were definitely moments where it was a little tense and I was like, oh my God, what's about to happen? You know, I don't know if it's a must read or a must listen, but I would definitely cue it. That's The Toll House by Carly Regan. If you're looking for like a little bit more of a cozy, spooky ghost story with, you know, pretty competently created characters.
Nice. I think you also have a podcast to share with us for Allison's Podcast Corner.
Yes.
Which people need to get into on the Discord.
Well, I also need to get into on the Discord.
Fair enough. In all maybe fairness. Maybe this is the podcast for people to start talking about podcasts on the Discord.
Maybe. But I found a new podcast obsession. Oh, my gosh. I've been binging this one so hard. It's called Otherworld. It's a storytelling podcast. A quote, true storytelling podcast. And it's all of the things that I love about Spooked, which is from the people who do Snap Judgment, but Spooked is all, you know, like scary stories, true scary stories that people lived. But it's a little bit longer form. So it kind of mixes like two of my favorite podcast, which is Spooked, and then This Is Actually Happening, and This Is Actually Happening doesn't just deals with all sorts of situations, but it's longer form, and that one tends to go into, you know, more of this person's background. It sets up a lot more context, and so that's kind of what this podcast does. And it's not just ghost stories; it's all sorts of weird experiences that people have had. So yeah, there are some ghost stories, but there's also like run-ins or supposed run-ins with cryptids. There's time slips. There's people experiencing things that the only thing that they can explain it as being is aliens. There's people having weird experiences with their family members where they're experiencing like the same sensations, completely different distances apart from each other, just all sorts of strange, weird stories, and it's people telling them. And the host is really great. He really dives into it. I like how he sets it up. I like the depth that he goes into with really setting up these stories and setting up the context for them. And he'll also every once in a while, he'll do some interviews as well with like non-storytellers. Well, there'll be some stories in there, but it's, you know, talking about kind of beyond just the stories. And I listened, one of my favorite episodes that I listened to, actually, he was interviewing Elijah Wood, of all people, who I learned has a production company called Spectre Vision, which is the movie production company that produced Mandy.
And I knew this.
Yes.
I just learned this too.
And A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a track record.
Two.
And I think Color Out of Space.
I haven't seen that, but yes, that is on the list.
Yeah, I still haven't seen that either, but I've heard it's great.
And like they also produce, they produce a podcast with Mike Flanagan as well. The production company, yeah, where Mike Flanagan and another person will watch a horror movie and then discuss it on the podcast together.
Oh, that I need to hear.
I think you do. I haven't checked it out yet. But anyways, Elijah Wood, you know, I learned in this podcast, has always been very into the supernatural, has a deep, deep love and appreciation for horror, hence creating an entire horror production company. Co-creating it. He has a co-creator who is also on the episode. But he's just like very open to those things. And it's funny because like, I mean, Elijah Wood has been in some horror, but you don't consider him a horror guy per se.
No, you know, a fucking nerd.
Yeah, but he loves the genre so much. And where I really connected with him during this interview was his love for horror as a genre to explain how people cope with the real horrors of life. And that's something I think about a lot. And so it was nice to hear him also verbalize that and share that. Anyways, it's a wonderful podcast. I would highly recommend it. Otherworld. I've been binging it so hard. Great stories. There's spooky stories across so many genres of types of paranormal experiences you can have. And it's just fascinating and very well produced.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sold on that.
Storytelling podcasts are not always my thing, but that sounds very interesting. And at the very least, I'm very curious to learn about the Mike Flanagan discussing horror podcast. That sounds like something I need in my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of other horrors, Allison with an I.
Speaking of how people cope with real life horrors through horror, good God. This show that I'm about to talk about is just wrapped up its final season and therefore the series. And it's not horror by like definition, but it's The Handmaid's Tale. And it's like the creators of Project 2025 read The Handmaid's Tale and they were like, write that down. Because, I mean, some of the stuff that's happening or that's happened in The Handmaid's Tale that was written in, you know, the 80s by Margaret Atwood are playing out directly, you know, not to get overly political, but there's no way around it. This show is inherently political. And to reuse the word timeless, unfortunately, it is like more relevant than ever. And it's been going for 6 seasons, 10 years, I believe. And I have proudly watched every season in real time when it's come out. I will say with my whole entire chest, it is my second favorite show of all time behind Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Yeah, so the series just wrapped up and there's so many mixed feelings on how the series wrapped up from other fellow longtime fans such as myself. I personally loved it because I just think, how else do you wrap an incredible series, an epic story? But yeah, I mean, I feel like for those of us who are frustrated and feel helpless and are like seething and sort of chomping at the bit watching what's going on with our current administration and just the horrors that every single day brings something new, which is very, very reminiscent of 2017 to 2021, where every day it was something new and your nervous system just doesn't get to relax. So for those of us that feel helpless and frustrated, this show was almost like a guidebook in how to fight back. And I like to think I watch every zombie movie so that I can take notes and I have like a better shot of surviving an apocalypse just because I've like got some arsenal of knowledge in my brain that will suddenly be useful if there's a zombie apocalypse. And I felt very much the same about watching this show. Like, take notes, you know, this is how you do a rebellion. So, you know, not typical horror, but very much horror. I know a lot of people, especially a lot of women in my life are like, I couldn't watch that. You know, there's rape and there's a lot of sexual violence. And understandably, I would encourage everyone, if you can, to just try, you know, to watch it. And, it, you know, it's not for everybody, but it like is for everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, one of those things where like, I don't know. I think it's important to me to stay uncomfortable because that's how you stay kind of ready to go. So I couldn't not talk about it. It's an epic series. It just ended. The second to last episode was one of the most beautiful episodes of television I've ever seen in my entire life. Mm. And the acting, I mean, I can't wait to see how many awards these people win, and deservedly so. It's fantastic. It's sad. It's crushing. It's hopeful. It's empowering. It's all the things that you want from television.
I loved the book and I love Elizabeth Moss, and yet I have resisted watching the series for its entire run. I think more or less for the reason, one of the reasons you just said, which is just, it just has felt too bleak to me. I'm like, why do I want to watch that? But maybe I'll check it out. That's a strong recommendation.
It is bleak, and then it's like, fuck yeah. It's like,
okay.
It destroys you, and then it builds you up, and it builds you up so high that you're just like, this is what I needed. You know, mm-hmm. you get the payoff. You do get the emotional payoff for how bleak it is.
Okay. That's reassuring to hear.
Totally. And you know what? I wouldn't say that if it wasn't true, because the bleak parts are bleak, but it's not without a counterpart in like total empowerment.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Well, you and I have another prominent, not series finale, but season finale to talk about. We chatted about some major developments in The Last of Us Season 2, last Horror Catch-Up episode. And we usually don't get into spoilers on these episodes, but we did last episode because, oh boy, there was a big one. I think we can talk about this season finale without getting too spoilery, probably. But if we end up going down that path, we'll throw a little warning in here. But feelings. I'm particularly curious to hear your thoughts, because again, I was prepared for this story, which continues to follow the video game, which I played pretty religiously. And I'm curious how it sat with you, because from what I've heard so far, particularly folks who did not know what to expect from the game have not been thrilled with this finale. What did you think?
So I will say that the second to last episode before the season finale, the second to last episode of Handmaids came out within 24 hours of the second to last episode of this season of The Last of Us.
Oh, wow.
I was like, somebody put this week in a test tube and study it, and like put it in a museum somewhere, because this is, like I said, the golden age of television.
Yeah.
So like this last week, not the season finale of The Last of Us, but last week's episode. Oh my God. Like, speaking of beautiful, beautiful storytelling.
Oh, incredible episode long flashback, kind of multi flashback, because it goes back to various periods in the history of the relationship between Joel and Ellie, and Pedro and Bella both just delivering a fucking acting masterclass.
And I really love that it filled in like the 5 years since they've been at Jackson, because they skipped over that. And I don't know how much of that backstory you get in the game, but the show, they can only, you know, there's only so much time. Mm-hmm. And there's only so much budget and whatever. I was thrilled, thrilled, thrilled that we got to see all of her birthdays and how their relationship mm-hmm. deepened, and how their sense of trust for each other deepened. These two characters are so guarded. And mm-hmm. there were so many times where I was just like, fucking talk to each other. You know, mm-hmm. like, you are both so stubborn. Neither of you are getting anywhere. Like, one of you has to soften up. And they do, but then it's like too late, and you're like, oh my God.
I cried at the end of that episode. Holy shit.
I cried too.
And I mean, and that doesn't happen to me often during movies. I will get like teared up or feel choked up, but I was like,
oh my God.
Like just ugly sobbing at the end of that episode.
When they're on the porch and oh my, forget it. I was like, fuck all this. This is so good. Pedro Pascal, you know, like, I hate to say it, but he does carry the show a lot. You know, they've got some big shoes to fill.
I will say, so I'm of two minds on that. On one hand, I think Bella Ramsey has been killing it this season, even in the episodes where he's not there. They are incredible. Like, before they set out for their journey, and I'm going to talk around the big spoiler that probably everybody already knows, but before Ellie and Dina set out on their journey, she has a moment that is completely silent. There's no dialogue, and there is like an entire conversation that happens on Bella Ramsey's face, and it is brilliant. Like, they are brilliant. The second mind that I am of, when I said I'm of two minds, is, it is hard to move into this era without Pedro on the show, because that dynamic between them was so central to the first one. Whether it's the game or the show, it is difficult to move beyond that dynamic.
And not just that, he has such a presence.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Like, he just is, He's such a good actor. His character is so lovable and so relatable, you
know? And so frustrating sometimes.
So frustrating, but like such is life, right?
Yep.
Like such as being a parent, such as being a friend, such as being a hero, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like he is a perfectly complicated person. But I will say, and so I'm not like a game player purist. I haven't played the game at all. So I'm not... I have no attachment to what the game was. I will say, watching it from this kind of objectivity, Ellie is pissing me off. She's pissing me the fuck off. And I know the last time you and I talked about The Last of Us, you said, how do you feel about Abby? And I said, I fucking hate her.
Yeah.
I'm sort of at the point where I'm like, I don't even know who I like better at this. And it's not like a contest.
Right.
But, you know... Ellie is supposed to have matured 5 years, and she is so selfish and so fucking reckless. Mm. And she's a brat. You know, there's a certain amount of empathy that I have for her, and it's a lot. Mm. And she's I'm at the edge of that with her, with that character, you know, because there are other people involved here. You know, there's community. This is always the underpinning of like man versus nature, man versus zombie, man versus man. It's like, you have to be able to zoom in and think about yourself and then zoom out and think about your community. And it's about individual survival, but it's about survival of the human race. It's about survival of morality. And she is just not – she's pissing me off. So I didn't love the way they left the last episode. It was a total cliffhanger, you know, for the game players. They know what to expect from season 3. And actually, there are some pretty reputable rumors that there might even be a season 4.
Yeah, I mean, the showrunner said as much.
The showrunner did say as much. I didn't love how they ended it. I don't know how I would have done it differently. I couldn't have. But I will say, to wait another 2 years for another season without Pedro, I don't know. I don't
know. Yeah.
They're going to lose some people. They're going to lose some people.
You know, obviously, I just mounted a pretty fierce defense of Bella Ramsey's acting. But also, you know, I'm with you that, I mean, it's the narrative's fault. It's not Bella's fault that, you know, I was riveted to that episode we talked about, the second to last episode, just eyes glued to it. And then the finale started and I was... my eyes were on my phone for at least half that episode. I was just like, okay, well, how do we get... I mean, some of it's because I played the game and I knew about where they were going to leave it, because there's a very clean, basically halfway point break in the game. And I'm like, the amount of narrative that they've adapted to this point, I know where they're leaving this. So some of it was just like, okay, just get me to that moment at the end. But yeah, I don't know. It's... the second game is inferior to the first. It's good, but the story material just isn't there. And I wish that they had just done a big second season. I don't think they should have broken this up. It's frustrating to people who haven't played the game. To people who have played the game, it's like, well, yeah, I remember this. And then it's like, you know, I mean, I guess spoilers, but you're just going to relive the last 3 days of Ellie's life from Abby's point of view. So you're just going to see a lot of things restaged. And in some ways, that works very well. It's empathy building. You're going to like Abby even fucking more if you're already thinking you might like Abby more than you thought. But it is a weird creative choice to just leave it there for a year or two and then deliver what is fundamentally not actually that much more narrative.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what they think they have queued up for the fourth season, because his comments were kind of ambiguous as to whether he thought he might be saving even more of the second game for a fourth season. I'm like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
Get the story of the second game done. Like, breaking it up into two seasons is bad enough.
Yeah.
Let alone a third one. Like, I really hope that he's thinking about doing something entirely different that hasn't been depicted in a game yet in the fourth season, because this does not need to be stretched out anymore.
Wait, there's going to be a fourth season?
Potentially.
He said as long as, like, they're still getting the audience, he thinks they need four seasons to tell the story. And like I said, that was ambiguous. He might be saying, we want to tell a story that hasn't been told in a game yet, which I would be down with, because the second game, there's still more story to be told, I think. Like, the second game ends in kind of an ambiguous and fucked up place still. Like, I could see either there being a third game or a fourth season that brings this whole narrative home in some way. But God, I really hope they're not stretching the second game out into three seasons. That would be terrible.
I don't know when we started waiting 2 years between things. Like, I know COVID fucked things up and the writer's strike fucked things up, but now it's almost sort of become the status quo. And it's like, wait a minute, that was only working for us because it was out of necessity, you know?
It's so annoying.
It's so annoying. You know,
has it been 2 years since the first season of Last of Us? Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
No way.
Yeah.
Time flies.
And I think from what I've heard, the first game was better than the second. And I will say again with my whole chest that the first season was goddamn almost perfect television. Yep. Second season, I was like, okay, I'm still here, but I don't know. I mean, I think I'll watch the third season with a little bit more apathy just because it's on. Yeah. But not with the anticipation that I had going into season two, which kind of lost me.
Yep. I'm with you there. The thing I'm most excited about for season three is just Caitlin Dever getting some fucking screen time because, I mean, again, for narrative reasons that do make sense, she's really barely in the second season, despite obviously playing a pivotal role. And the third season is going to be her season. And from the few minutes of screen time she did get, she's shown that she's ready, you know?
Yeah, I will say when she showed up there at the end of the last episode, I was ready to see her again. I was like, all right, girl, let's fucking do this.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited on that level in 2 years, but we'll talk about it then.
Agreed.
Well, I think that gets us through our horror catch-up for this month. And next episode, we will be going back to our regular format, reviewing a Netflix horror movie. And it is Allison with an I's turn to pick. So what are we watching next episode?
So next episode, I've got a movie picked out that I have heard a bit about, but not so much. I don't truly even really know what it's about other than this little Netflix blurb, but it's a 2025 film, Hard Eyes.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
You guys have heard of it?
I saw the trailer a few times.
I heard the name.
Yeah.
So the very brief synopsis that we get on Netflix is, when a killer who targets romantic partners every Valentine's Day mistakes them as a couple, co-workers Allie and Jay have a deadly date with destiny.
Mm.
So
we get another Jay.
We love a Jay around here.
We always love an excuse to use that sound effect.
Yeah, this movie had me at, fuck Valentine's Day, let's kill some people. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
All right. Well, that's going to be next episode of this podcast. Hard Eyes. We'll be watching, reviewing, and discussing. Until then, visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com, where you can find a list of every episode that we've ever done. You can find a link to our merch store where you can get goods and sundries with every horror movie on Netflix art that I designed on it. And we'd also love for you to connect with us on social media.
You can find us on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, YouTube at Amoncast, EHMONcast. Or you can also find us on TikTok at Amon Podcast. And then we also have our Discord server. Come join it, be a part of it, and share your thoughts on the films that we've been watching and also whatever you've been watching as well.
And we've got a link to the Discord and all our social media in the show notes if you're looking for that. Lastly, find us on your podcast provider of choice. Subscribe and leave us a review. We'd love to see the feedback, and it helps people find the show. All right, well, that closes out our horror catch-up for this month. We will be back next week with a review of Hard Eyes. Until then, for every horror movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Allison with an I.
And I'm Allison with a Y.
We'll see you next time.